Philosophy sometimes gets a bad rap. Many think it's boring, too difficult to understand, or just an opportunity for academics to engage in discussions that have nothing to do with real life. Thomas Cathcart has shown us that philosophy can not only be interesting, but also engaging and entertaining. His first book, co-authored with Daniel Klein, is titled Plato and Platypus Walk Into a Bar, Understanding Philosophy Through Jokes. It was a bestseller and gives a reader an irreverent crash course in great philosophical thinkers and traditions. His latest book is The Trolley Problem, or Would You Throw the Fat Guy Off the Bridge? And Tom Cathcart joins us in our Woods Hole studios. Good morning and welcome back.
Good morning, Minnie. So good to be back
here.
Good
to see you. All right. Yeah. First, for listeners not familiar with the trolley problem, explain this conundrum and who originally thought it up.
Okay. It was originally thought up way back in the 1960s by a British philosopher, a woman philosopher, named Philippa Foot. And then it sort of lay dormant for many years. It was originally published in an obscure philosophy journal. And then suddenly it was on YouTube. And so now, depending on the age of the person you're talking to, if they're under 25, they've heard of the trolley problem. If they're over 50, they probably haven't. And it's now used as kind of an intellectual puzzle in philosophy and psychology courses in college, in high school, on the internet. It's all over the place if you're young enough.
All right, so tell us what the problem is.
Okay, the original problem. Well, this is a slight variation on the original problem. It's had a history. And the slight variation is the one that's become popular, and it's this. You're standing by a trolley track. And you see there's an out-of-control trolley coming down the track. You think there's something wrong, and you look around, and you see that if the trolley keeps going, it's going to hit and kill five people who are standing on the track. And you're figuring, oh, my Lord, what can I do? And all of a sudden, you see you're standing by a switch. And you see that if you pull that switch, you're going to divert the trolley onto another track, a sidetrack. Unfortunately, there's one person standing on the sidetrack. And so the question is, would you pull the switch?
It's a dilemma. All right. So the subtitle of the book, Would You Throw the Fat Guy Off the Bridge? Tell us about the fat man scenario and how that differs from the runaway trolley.
Okay. When you ask most people the first question, you know, would you pull the switch? Most people say yes. In fact, there's an online test you can take, and 89% of people who take that test say yes, they would pull the switch. Mm-hmm. And the reason most of them give is just the math. It's better to kill one than five. You know, they draw the analogy to pilots who have a choice between crash landing in a city or crash landing in the countryside, and they choose to crash land in the countryside, even though it will kill somebody. Okay, the next question is, now you're standing on an overpass, pedestrian overpass, over the trolley track. You see the trolley coming. It's out of control. You see it's going to hit the five people. There's no switch. There's no sidetrack. You think, what can I do? And you realize that the only way you could save the five people is if you dropped a very, very heavy object in front of the trolley and stopped it. And you look around on the bridge and you don't see any heavy objects. And then you notice you're standing next to a very portly gentleman.
Oh, boy.
So
Would
you push him? Yes.
Oh, boy. Okay. So you wrote The Trolley Problem in this unique way. You let all the arguments and analogies associated with the conundrum unfold through this fictional trial of a woman who was actually faced with the trolley problem. How did you decide to write it in that manner?
I was looking for an interesting and kind of captivating way to pose it, to make it a little dramatic, to give it a little fiction, to, you know, get people involved in the puzzle of it. And then my editor was quite helpful, actually, in suggesting that we get it outside the courtroom as well and have people commenting on the trial and so forth. So the whole thing takes place in and around this crazy trial where Daphne Jones is on trial for having pulled the switch and killed a man, and she's on trial for manslaughter.
Right, and the arguments are pretty interesting on both sides. Yeah, I wonder how many people reading your book and listening to the testimony in this court of public opinion apply the golden rule when trying to answer the question, do unto others as you would have them do unto you?
Yeah, actually, there's a chapter in the book sort of devoted to that because some people try to do that. The problem with that is that it depends upon who you're comparing yourself to, you know. If you say, well, do unto others as you would have others do unto you, I wouldn't want to be one of the guy on the sidetrack who gets run over, so therefore I shouldn't pull the switch. On the other hand, some people say, well, I wouldn't want to be one of the five who was run over, and therefore I shouldn't pull the switch. Some people say, I wouldn't want to be that person at all who had to make that decision.
Well, it's interesting, too, when you talk about the different logic of each decision, you use an example of the doctor who sacrifices the one man. Tell us that. Because then when you hear in those terms, you go, wait a second.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sort of the most grotesque scenario. It really tests, you know, your answer of, yes, I would pull the switch. Because, you know, the argument is that this is an analogous situation, and would you do this one? So now you're a surgeon, and you're in the emergency room, and there's a big crash out on Route 6 and a big pileup, and several people are brought into Cape Cod Hospital. You're in the ER, and you're trying to triage all these people. And so you look at the first guy. There are six of them in your ER. You look at the first guy, and you say, oh, my Lord, he needs a lung transplant. And you look at the second guy, and you say, whoa, he needs a heart transplant. The third guy needs a kidney transplant. The fourth guy needs a kidney transplant. The fifth guy needs a liver transplant. And so you're thinking, my Lord, where am I ever going to find donors for all these five patients? And then you examine the sixth guy, and he's been sent in for observation, and he has nothing apparently wrong with him at all. So you can see the diabolical question coming. Do you take him to the operating room, remove all of his organs, and transplant them into the five, thereby sacrificing one, but
saving five. It's quite the dilemma, isn't it? Yeah. This leads us to another philosophical question, which is worse, taking no action and letting the tragic events occur, or taking it upon yourself to choose the fate of others. So you could just stand and say, hey, whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
That's right, yes. And that's why I gave you a slight variation on the original trolley problem. In the original trolley problem, you're not standing by a switch. You're the driver of the trolley. In the little variation, one of your options is to do nothing because you're standing by the switch. And so some people say, well, we shouldn't play God. One of my options is to just let fate take its course and not intervene at all. And that would be the better thing to do, because otherwise I'm taking it upon myself to play God and make life and death decisions.
Mm. So where do you draw the line between taking a life and letting someone die? Is it, you know, is your choice justified regardless of the reason? There's a lot of questions we're raising here.
A lot of questions, yep.
So several times you touch on the interplay between emotion and logic when it comes to challenging ethical decisions. So do you feel emotion or intuition should play a role in the ethical decision-making process?
Should play? Don't know. It certainly does play, as we all know. Yeah, that's one of the interesting dilemmas. The psychologists and the neuroscientists who have done brain scans when they ask people the various scenarios, and they say, well, you know, it's not a question of should, it's a question of how we're hardwired. We have an emotional reaction to throwing the guy off the bridge. We don't have so much of an emotional reaction to pulling the switch, maybe because it's not hands-on, maybe because we're just allowing somebody to die rather than directly killing them. For whatever reason, we don't have as much of an emotional reaction. And therefore, you know, it's not a question of what should you do, it's a question of what do we do, what are we hardwired to do. But then the philosophers come back in. They say, well, wait a minute. You know, yes, of course. You know, if you just are a passive, you know, recipient of your emotions and then act on them, that is one option, but we don't have to do that. You know, you can say, well, yes, even though I have this emotional reaction, I'm not going to do it. Good is not the same thing as how you feel. There's a very tricky argument that was brought up by a philosopher named G.E. Moore. And G.E. Moore said, well, wait a minute, you can't reduce good to something else, because if you do, you can always ask, well, is that something else really good? Mm-hmm. So some people want to say, well, no, good's reducible to what makes you feel pleasant. Well, G.E. Moore said, well, wait a minute. If I asked you, you know, is the pleasant necessarily good? You wouldn't think I was asking, is the pleasant necessarily pleasant? That's because good means something else. Mm-hmm. It's an evaluative term, and you can't reduce it to something else.
So in writing various arguments and analysis of so many different people, did you actually consult psychologists, professors, and Catholic bishops as you wrote the book?
Not directly, no. But there is an argument that the Catholic bishops, for example, make, and interestingly, it's based on an old argument from St. Thomas Aquinas back in the 13th century. And St. Thomas Aquinas said, course, wasn't talking about these two trolley scenarios, but what he would have said is that in the switch scenario, you don't intend for the person on the siding to die. That's right. Not your intention. That's an unfortunate consequence. But sometimes when we do an action, it has a good consequence and a bad consequence. And it's important that you not intend the bad consequence. It's also important that the bad consequence not be the cause of the good consequence. For example, when you throw the guy off the bridge, you need that guy to die. You need that guy to be hit by the trolley because otherwise it's not going to save the five people. When you divert the person onto the siding, you don't need that person to die. In fact, you hope the guy will get off the track. Mm-hmm. You know, the question is framed in such a way that he can't get off the track. But even though you know that, you don't need him to die. And in fact, you don't want him to die. In the bridge scenario, you need him to die if you're going to save the five people. So that's called the doctrine of double effect. It's still part of Catholic teaching.
And you also posed the question of the what we would do versus what we should do. So explain the difference and why it's an interesting question to ask yourself.
Yeah, I guess it goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago about the emotional part of it or how your brain is hardwired or whatever. And interestingly enough, the evolution theorists jump in at this point too and say sometimes the reason you would do A rather than B is that evolution has hardwired you to do A rather than B for reasons of the survival of the species. But what you should do is always another question that you can ask, because we're hardwired by evolution to do all kinds of crazy things that we don't do. Males are hardwired to spread their seed as widely as they can, and yet we say no. You know, we're not going to spread our seed as widely as we can. We're going to have monogamous relationships. That's the difference between would and should.
In your epilogue, you quote a British journalist who once said, "I'm sorry, I just don't do trolleys," explaining that some philosophers think that the trolley problem is so far removed from ordinary human experience and real ethical dilemmas that it's trivial. But you also write in the prologue that such thought experiments, by their very simplicity, can help us clarify the way we make or should make more complicated ethical decisions. So can you discuss some real-life scenarios that the trolley problem might apply to, and perhaps how simple thought experiments could illuminate their answers?
Sure. And you explained the argument very well that even though this is a very far-fetched situation, very few cities even have trolleys. The ones who do, very few people are standing by the track when a trolley careers out of control. But still, the simplicity of it elucidates a couple principles. One is the greatest good for the greatest number. And that's when people say, "I would pull the switch because it's better to kill one than five." They're saying something that Jeremy Bentham said a couple centuries back. What good means is whatever has the happiest consequences for the greatest number of people. It's called utilitarianism, what's most useful in bringing about happiness, or it's called consequentialism. And by that he meant actions aren't good or bad in themselves. You know, they're only good or bad depending on what their consequences are. The opposite point of view from that was elucidated by Immanuel Kant, who said, "No, wait a minute. There are certain rights that people have. And regardless of what causes the greatest good for the greatest number, you have to respect those rights. You have a duty toward people to protect their rights." And that's what's built into our Constitution, into the U.S. Constitution, because the framers of the Constitution were very afraid that if you just took an unbridled utilitarian approach and said greatest good for the greatest number, the majority could take what the minority has. Mm-hmm. And you'd say, okay, greatest good for greatest number. You know, sorry, minority.
Back to the guy who you took all his organs, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Greatest good for the greatest number. We'll take your organs. Thank you. So that's kind of the basic dilemma, is whether you're going to be like a Benthamite and you're going to say greatest good for the greatest number in all cases, or whether you're going to be like Kant and the U.S. Constitution and say, whoa, no, wait a minute. There are rights beyond which you cannot apply greatest good for the greatest number. Now, I'm forgetting the original question you asked me, and I was getting sideways.
Some real-life scenarios that trolley problem might apply to.
Well, we mentioned one already, which is the pilot who has to decide. There was an actual case in World War II when those V-1 rockets were being sent over from Germany to bomb London, and they were missing the mark. They were aimed for the center of London, but they were landing actually in northwest London, I guess. And the Germans had no way of knowing that. The British had a double agent, and he was really a British agent. but the Germans thought he was their man. And so they said, well, tell the Germans that these doodlebugs, as they were called, are missing the mark. But tell them that they're missing the mark by being not far enough northwest. So when the word got back to the Germans that they were off the mark, but they had been given the wrong information about which direction they were off the mark, then they corrected for it, and the bombs fell even further outside the center of London. So they killed way fewer people, but the people they killed were different people. So there were people in Churchill's cabinet who said, no, you can't do that. These people were in no danger, and you are killing them deliberately, or allowing them to be killed, as St. Thomas would say. And you're doing it for the greatest good, for the greatest number, but you can't do that.
Right.
Churchill said, we're going to do it anyway. He did it and saved several thousand lives. There were 6,000 lives lost as it was, and there would have been scores of thousands.
Since you didn't supply us with the verdict in the book, how would you answer the trolley problem?
How would I,
personally?
How would you, Ooh, Mindy.
I'll tell you what I thought after you tell
me. Okay. First of all, it depends on what day of the week you ask me. On some days of the week, St. Thomas's distinction makes sense to me. I think it does make a difference whether you intend to kill that person. I think it does make a difference whether you're putting that person's life directly on the line and you need that person to die, or whether you're, in fact, just allowing something to happen, which is the Churchill situation, actually. He didn't deliberately kill those people. It was too bad that they died, but they were, you know, it was a necessary consequence of saving the multitudes. A lot of days of the week, that makes good sense to me. On the alternate days, I answer the way most people answer on the website quiz, which, by the way, if listeners want to check it out, it's called moralsense.com.
Yeah, we'll put it up, a link on our website.
Yeah, that's great. And you can take the test right online and, you know, register your own answers. Most people, interestingly, say that they would pull the switch, they would not push the fat man, and when you ask them why, they give different sorts of answers. Some people give St. Thomas's answer, but they give different answers. But most people say, I don't know. It just feels different. And I have to admit that for all of my trying to bring philosophical analysis to this, most days of the week, that's where I come from, too. It's just an intuition.
Well, yeah, and you never know. You don't know what you're going to do until you're in a crisis. You think you know, but
that's
you don't.
Also true.
But my thought when I was going to say, why didn't you just turn around and go, hey, look out?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. In some, when some people write up this scenario, they have a wall on either side of the track, or they have a tunnel, or there's some reason they can't get off the track. Obviously.
Look out. Tom Cathcart, his new book is The Trolley Problem, or Would You Throw the Fat Guy Off the Bridge? Thanks so much for coming in and saying hi.
Oh, thank you, Mindy. It's been a real pleasure.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.